everybody. Welcome back to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light and sometimes give you a top five list. Today is one of those days. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And Tom, today, yes, like I said, we are going to be doing a top five list. Now, usually we do top tens, but there isn't a super amount of these things that we're going to be doing a list about. So narrowing it down to five just made it a little bit more difficult, I think, for us. A little bit more, you know, romantic, a little bit more intimate. We got to get in there and understand why we chose these five things. Now, what are these five things, though?
We are talking about our five picks, personal picks for the best gaming controllers.
Now,
what we think is the best way to experience a game and how said controller enhances the overall package to deal.
Yeah, so we're not talking about, like, this is the best alternative style controller, like a special edition controller, or this is the best looking controller or anything like that. We're talking about, how does it feel? How does it make you feel?
How is it ergonomically designed? Are the buttons where they need to be? Do we think that the controller is meaty enough to survive a throw at the wall from a rage quit? You know, like, all the basics, all the core skeletal pieces you need to enjoy a game. Does this controller take you there?
Right.
And that's what we're going to be diving
right
into.
And it could be a colored version of it, if you think about it. Because, like, if this is a controller that came with a console. So if you bought a special edition console, for instance, I have my PlayStation 4 Spider-Man one. It's a cool red one, but it's still just a base PlayStation 4 controller with some colors to it. But we're going to talk about the base.
We're not going to sit here and try to convince you that, like, you know, the Resident Evil 4 chainsaw controller is a masterpiece. We want to look at the actual core controller of a console and be like, does it work?
Yeah, so unfortunately, Josh, the Steel Battalion controller does not mix, because that is not a base controller.
Cool-ass controller, but not going to be talked about. So, Josh, jumping right into it, I would like to give you leave to begin the list. What's your fifth recommendation for awesome controllers?
We're going to go back in time, like we normally
back
do in this
podcast. Back in time.
Bam! Boom, 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 and we are going to be going into the 80s, because I will be choosing number five to be the Nintendo Entertainment System controller. You got a D-pad.
Expected.
And you got two buttons. And if you count the start and select button, you have four control buttons technically. But you got A, B, and the D-pad. And this is really the console that revealed the D-pad to the world. Like, there,
a lot of previous consoles, like with the Atari, they went all in on that joystick. And a classic kind of concept, and an obvious kind of concept. But, you know, a D-pad lets you be a lot more precise.
Yeah. I mean, what controller nowadays really doesn't have a D-pad to it? Yeah, you
and if you don't have a good one, you get so much flack for it.
Look at the Switch, but then they go ahead and they put it on their Pro controller. But the D-pad was created with this controller. Like, it's something that's universally known now, all across, you know, electronics and entertainment and gaming and media and anything. Like, you look at it and you're like, that's a D-pad, and it came from this controller. But it's a rectangle that feels so comfortable in your hands. It's so weird. Like, how does something just rectangular and boxy and sharp edges feel so comfortable? And the concave buttons to it as well, so your fingers can easily go from running to jumping on, you know, when you're playing Mario, or, you know what button you're pressing at all times just because of the way these buttons feel. And I think it's a great controller, and it's a nice looking controller as well. That gray with the black and red to it.
I expected this, and I can't argue with it. It's iconic for a reason. It set so many standards, and it's the way it was built upon has just left an indelible mark on gaming history. Easy pick, totally down with it. Agreed.
But now, what is so low on your list that could be shocking?
Well, I am going to say something that may cause you to faint, but my number five is actually, honestly, a keyboard and mouse. I did not grow up a PC gamer because my parents did not let me play PC games. But, you know, I've really, in the past, like, two-ish years, three-ish maybe, as friends have introduced me to things like, you know, Overwatch and Stellaris and a wealth of other interesting PC games, I've really gotten an affection down for this system. And, you know, this is a super varied one because, you know, it's not like there's only one kind of PC that comes with one kind of keyboard, but this is the only time on the list I'm going to talk about user customization and how that's a good thing. You know, it's just the variability of letting anyone, based on their comfort level or maybe another kind of consideration that a gamer may have on an individual level, this can accommodate it for you. And when it's designed well, like, don't get me wrong, I think there are games that play best on consoles and a keyboard and mouse is not an acceptable substitute for a controller. But when it works. And when you can tailor it to what you want, I think that's a positive thing. And I just wanted to kind of acknowledge it at the bottom of my list and talk about how I've come to see that it is a force for good, despite how much ragging I would do over the years.
It is a good choice. It's a shocking choice because I was thinking mainly just consoles because, you know, PCs are not consoles because they are the lowest form of gaming.
Got to get that salt back in. No, but yeah.
But yeah, you touch on customization, and that's something that's huge now in gaming. It's really hard to find a game where you can't customize your controllers. I mean, the latest update with the Switch actually utilizes so you can customize the buttons to however you would want. I know Xbox took over with the adaptive controlling so that anybody can play a game anyway.
Adaptive controller, I think, is one of the greatest forces for good in gaming history.
Absolutely. Love that it exists. But for sitting down and, you know, keyboard and mouse having pretty much hundreds of buttons at your disposal, depending on how crazy of a mouse that you want, or mouse and keyboard, because mice can have 36 buttons onto them now. I think it is a good choice for it, and it's, yeah, it is. I always get lost when I'm on a keyboard. I'm like, shit, like, where the hell? I have to look down at my hands and stuff like that. But it's like, I get it. If you grew up with it nonstop, and I did, I played PCs games for a long period of time before I jumped back over into consoles. It is, the customization is really what makes these two things perfect.
Thank you for completely validating everything I said.
Yeah.
But no, moving on, I promise it'll be console based from here. So, but Josh, I need to hear what's number four? Lead us along, please. You are number four.
Number four is the best controller to play PC games with. Ladies and gentlemen, number four is the Xbox 360 controller. Ooh. And you could say the wired one. You could say the wireless one. They both control exactly the same. I think the handling to these controllers is great. The way that they fit in your hand is perfectly fine. The button response to them, they're not overly big, unlike the Duke was. It was something that felt comfortable and felt right. And the fact that if you got the wired one, plug it right into your computer and boom, you got a USB controller for your computer. So it acted as a two-in-one. You don't need to worry about all the excess of loading up memory cards in the top of your controller. You didn't need to worry about the black and white buttons. You got the dual bumpers now. So you have your triggers and any of your right and left bumpers. The controller felt great. It was pretty lightweight. And I mean, it looked nice. I'm a huge fan of the Xbox controller just because I think offset thumbsticks are the best way to go when it comes to gaming. I think it feels the most comfortable in it, but I think the Xbox 360 is the best controller that you can use on the PC and one of the best controllers made.
I agree, but I cannot go any further into detail why for reasons. So okay. Just move along.
Okay. Okay. Well, we should move it on to your number four, Tom.
Yes, a new one, but I think its impressiveness should be noted. It is the Switch Pro Controller, which I think is honestly the best way to play Switch games, period. If this is an option for playing it, you should be using it. The Joy-Cons, in concept and in most execution, are delightful and great, and I think they're very cute, but the D-pad's lacking. The controllers are a little fragile. You know, I have had to clean mine out a ton. And, you know, Joy-Con drift, everyone, I'm going through it. I think Animal Crossing probably exacerbated the problem for a lot of people. But the Pro Controller, you know, it is sturdy. It's well-designed. Its button ergonomics are fantastic. The D-pad on this thing is a joy to use. It makes playing any kind of side-scrolling or maybe top-down game just, like, effortless. Probably the best D-pad in gaming console controller history, possibly. We'll talk more about that in a bit. But the buttons being rounded and raised up give them a really effortless and effective feel. Like, you know what you're tapping, and it just feels good, and it's very responsive. And the textured handles make the grip feel like super comfortable and just secure. Like, it's something that you honestly just enjoy getting a good long session in holding it. Very delightful, very good design, and the fact that it still incorporates some motion options. You don't get like the full range of things that the Joy-Cons can do individually, but you know, if you're say playing Mario Kart, a nice flick up of the Pro Controller gets you your jumps. It's good for things like that. There's still some gyroscopic control features built in. So, like, you know, if you're using the Switch Pro Controller on a PC, which you can do via Bluetooth, there's certain games that you can even get gyroscopic options out of on that. So, Switch Pro Controller, pretty dang good. I have to give it a what's up on my list.
Yeah, it is good. It has not made my list, I'll tell you that right now. I will say the D-pad is really well made on that controller. That is the controller that I used to play Celeste for the first time with. And if you know anything about Celeste, it is pixel perfect platforming. And the best way to do the best way to do platforming is really with a D-pad, so you can get that precision as you're going through.
I started playing Celeste on the Switch. I was playing it handheld in Joy-Con mode, and after a while, I was kind of like, argh! And I have been playing it docked with the Pro Controller since, because it does allow you to get those tight and precise jumps down a lot more often.
Yep. So Celeste, The Messenger, Hollow Knight, all games I played on the Switch with the Pro Controller using the D-pad, mm-hmm. because it did feel great with those type of platformers. So a tip of the hat.
Yes, sir. Okay, Josh, Three's Company, I guess. Please give me your number three. It's the best pun I'm going to give you for this.
Well, number three is one that caused many, many blisters to people. But it's really the only way to play Super Smash Brothers.
Oh, okay.
And that is the Nintendo GameCube controller. The controller that just won't die.
Never.
It really won't. It's almost 20 years now, and they're still producing them because people demand to use those for Smash Brothers or for Mario Kart or for any type of Nintendo game. And I'm surprised that the Pro Controller just wasn't an offshoot of the GameCube controller for the most part. Because people really do act like it is... It's like the second coming of Christ when they release a new GameCube controller. Like, it really is. People are like, oh my God, I'm playing with my GameCube controller on my Switch, or I'm playing with it on my Wii U, or I'm playing with it on my Wii, or like, that controller lasted four generations of consoles. And it's still being released and produced. And you can go to Best Buy right now and buy a four pack of GameCube controllers, wired or wireless. Correct? Yeah. Or you can buy the Nintendo ones, which are wired. Like, that controller will not die. Unless you get the Wave Bird.
I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. Yeah, no. Cool. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. My number three, it's also the GameCube controller. So let's just get in on this together. It is a survivor, as you said, for a reason. It is uniquely designed in the best way. You know, it looks a little cartoonish and almost kind of like a Mad Catz little kid controller, maybe, when you look at it.
It does.
Like, think about just the logic behind the button placement. A, the most commonly used button in almost any video game, make that the biggest, most easy to reach button. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Exactly. It's the jump button in almost any platformer. It's like the confirm button in almost any menu assignment. make that the centerpiece that your thumb rests on. Genius. And then the way the B, X, and Y float around it, you know, like your thumb just kind of naturally goes from one to one to one. The design is just, it's so good. And I think that's the appeal of it. You know what I mean? Like you said, for Smash Brothers, with A, that's your standard and smash attacks. And, you know, if you're, as long as you're not spamming your specials, that's what you're going to be focusing most of your strategy around. So, of course, it makes it a good controller for that. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And you brought it up before I jumped in. The Wavebird. Can we talk about, like, the Wavebird, the first perfect wireless controller? I'm just going to say it. I'm going to claim it.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. Like, it... Because we've had wireless control. We had wireless controllers all the way back at the NES timeframe and the Super Nintendo and the Genesis, and they just never worked the way that they should have. And then, knock, 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 here comes the Wavebird, this big, kind of bulky controller. It was kind of bulky, but it didn't hinder your experience playing any game on the GameCube or the Wii.
I have a Wavebird that is at least 18 years old, and I still have cleaner and more consistent wireless gameplay functionality from it than I have with some of my Xbox One controllers now. You know what I mean? It's, you know, it's RF. I assume it's RF sensors in the base that respond with the receiver, which you plug into your console. They communicate so cleanly. There is very little interruption. And I think you get about a 30-foot range out of it. It's incredible for 2002-ish when that came out. It's just very good. And the rest of the GameCube's just design elements, like I said, the D-pad, great D-pad. Very comfortable and easy to reach sticks. Like, there's not a button I have a problem getting to. You know, it's a good-ass controller.
The only problem I ever run into with GameCube controllers is the Z button sometimes sticks.
Okay.
On some of my controllers. Okay. And the C button can get really loose at times. The C analog stick.
I think both of those are probably a measure of just wear and tear.
I was going to say, the majority of my GameCube controllers I've had since OG. Like, I've had them all since, like, originally. I don't think I've ever gotten rid of a GameCube controller. So I have, like, a mass hoard of them back in my storage room.
Yeah, and, like, the thing is, don't, because just because Nintendo releases them doesn't mean that they're actually steadily available. Official right. Nintendo GameCube controllers do disappear quite frequently.
Right.
So hang on to them.
So, number two.
Yeah, you cool if I'm going right to number two, even though I kind of tag teamed in on three?
No, yeah, I would say if you want to jump to number two, then yeah.
All right. Thank you. You're such a gracious man. Aww. I appreciate it. And I'm about to talk about what I think is a gracious controller, a generous controller, the Xbox 360. I think that this is a chunky boy, don't get me wrong, but I think its design is ingenious for its era. And talk about an upgrade. You know, as controllers have evolved, like, Nintendo's evolution is usually all over the place. You never know what they're going to do next. But Xbox, compared to Sony, who just for the PlayStation 3, it was like, it's the last one, but now there's a PlayStation button on it. With 360, it was like, okay, everyone was upset by our controller. I mean, most people were upset. I'm sure the Xbox faithful of Gen 1 adapted to it, but the Duke had dozens of problems. And even when they made the slim version of it, you know, that black and white secondary button placement being moved up to shoulder bumpers, so much better. So much better. The D-pad, in my opinion, that's the best Xbox D-pad we've had short of an Xbox One Elite controller. You know what I mean? One that you, the best D-pad you don't have to spend over $100 on.
Right.
And the Jewel, I think the Xbox 360's menu Jewel is probably the best implementation to this day of like a menu button on a controller. I think with the Xbox One, making it like, what's the kind of phrase, just like flush with the face of the controller, kind of makes it like easy to miss sometimes. And I don't know, the way like PlayStation and Nintendo have like messed with home and menu buttons, it's just never felt as intuitive as like that big, distinct, appealing looking Jewel that, you know, you instantly float your thumb over like a little dome and you know it's like, boom, I'm going to the menu, you know, boom, it's instantaneous. These are small things, but
yeah,
they're things that matter, you know, in use. And I really admire the Xbox 360 controller. I think it's well designed. I think it is got a wide range of stuff, as you mentioned. It can be easily plugged in and used as a PC controller, so you've got more options there. It's just wonderful. It's very good. I don't think people give it enough credit. It's good. It's a good thing.
So, going back and talking about the original Xbox controller, yes, sure, the Duke was a bulky boy, right? But the second generation of like re-releases of the original Xbox, they had another controller come out, which what we're talking about, though, is this came, the Duke came out with the console. So the Duke would be the one for the original Xbox. The re-release controller for the Xbox was a much smaller controller, and you can see it almost morphing into that Xbox 360 controller. It was the same, like, weight, it was the same kind of design, but it was more still of that military rugged, like sharp edge, like look to it that they had, which was still a great controller, but man, did they polish it and make it more smooth, and just like how soft it is to touch a Xbox 360 controller too. It's not a like hefty piece of plastic. It's a very smooth and relaxing holding type device. So
Yeah, great hand feel, great design. I just like it a lot. All right, Josh, what is your runner up, your silver medal? Hit me with it.
Ooh, my number two controller is the PlayStation 4 controller.
Interesting.
And okay. It was originally much lower on my list of controllers. But after playing The Last of Us and The Last of Us 2 more recently, that controller has become more comfortable in my hands. I think the analog sticks that they use, they have this weird like rubberized grip to them that almost make it a little bit too soft to play with, which is very relaxing though, because it's like you can feel like your finger movements are like, if you're going really soft, it reacts to it. If you're going really fast or really hard or trying to make a quick turn or something like that, it's reacting to it. It's a very sensitive style analog stick. And I'm not a huge fan of those analog sticks being so damn close to each other. But I will give praise to the sacred symbols, which is your triangle, square, circle, and cross. And it gave you, it's the first controller that deleted the start button. Start button doesn't exist anymore, right? Mm-hmm. We have our menu.
It's share.
Yep. We have our menu, okay. And we have share, where you can instantly go and share your stuff on any of your social media platforms by the press of one button. The fact that it has a touchscreen interface in the middle of the controller itself too, is a very nice feature. It's not used for many games, but it is a very nice feature. The light bar on the back of it works with certain games. You don't need to have it on if you don't want to, because it will drain your battery, but it is nice indicator. So for instance, if you're playing, let's say, Resident Evil 2, and you are at full health, the light bar is green. You get bit a couple times, your light bar will turn yellow. And it'll turn red to signify and let you know, without having to look at the game's menu stuff, that your character is slowly dying. The fact that it has a speaker built inside of it, too, that can react to what you're playing in the game. If you're listening to audio logs in the game, it might come through the speaker on the controller itself. The fact that you can plug a headphone set in the bottom of that controller and listen to the game and talk to people if you have a microphone built into it. Instantaneous. The fact that it's Bluetooth enabled is a great piece, that you can just plug it up to any Bluetooth device. If you want to hook it up to a phone, you can hook it up to your computer. You can. There's so many great things to that controller. The D-pad, not one of those, but there's a lot of great features in this thing, in this controller. And that's why the PlayStation 4 controller deserves to be number two.
All right. It is a controller I respect in the few instances that I have gotten to play with it. I have, just to be honest with you, an issue with the little touchscreen enabled square on the front, in that, as you said, it's not used a ton. And I think that's a problem, because it's such a large piece of the real estate on the controller itself. And to not have it be used consistently makes it feel like a little bit of a waste, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of a design flaw there. But I like the lights. beyond like usage in the games in cool ways, which you mentioned, they're also a super handy way of like just identifying whose controller is which. You know what I mean? Like if you have four black PlayStation 4 controllers and you're playing a game of friends, you know, like Josh, you're green, I'm red, Mary's blue, and Becca's yellow. You know what I mean? Because the lights are just going to like hold on to it for us. Yeah, that's just a good common sense thing. I do like the concave kind of, I don't, maybe concave wasn't the right word, but the way that the joysticks on it, you know, like,
yeah, they're concave.
It's good, that good, good, good hand feel. Is what I'm saying. Like, it feels good and natural. I was a little critical earlier, and I'm going to be critical. Just like, I feel like Sony's kind of policy has been, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And they've mostly stuck to that, and I think with decent amount of success. But this was one where, like, where the fix, you know, was these sharing integration buttons, and a little mixed, but otherwise good controller. I'm this is like backhanded compliments. I like it.
It's trying to take the PS3 controller, which the PS3 controller is a great controller, but it was pretty much a PS2 controller, just much lighter and had motion controls built inside of it, which the PlayStation 4 controller does too.
Which is funny that the PlayStation 3 controller arguably had more tech in it, and yet it was lighter, because those things do feel very flimsy, the PS3 controller. Yeah. I feel like I might break it at any point.
But going back to like the ability, like it just adapted to the times, though. Like we are in the age of social media, so why can't we just activate it right from our one button on our controller? Instantly go to stream on Twitch or YouTube or anything. Like it, I think it was a great change from something that was pretty stale for a while.
I agree. They were thinking forward to the future, 100% on that one.
So Tom, what is your number one? The final top dog. The top one.
Well, we're in the Sony family conversation, so I'm just going to stick with it. The DualShock 2 for the PlayStation 2. I personally think this is the peak of PlayStation controller design to date. We'll have to see what the DualSense does for us with the PS5. But, you know, this is where they got the formula 100%, and I think it is just, it's lightweight, but it feels substantial. You know what I mean? You're holding this, the uniformity of the button placement from end to end is this really nice and appealing layout. And I agree with you, what you said up top. You know, what was the phrase you used? Control sticks that are too close. You used the phrase for it. Like, you prefer the Xbox because they're...
Oh, they're offset.
Offset, thank you, yes. I would overall say that offset control stick placement is superior. But I have just a lot of experience from my high school years of playing PS2 games, and I kind of just have like a natural kind of muscle memory that goes down to it, because even though it's different than what used to be the standard, it still feels good. You know what I mean? The D-pad on that, really great. That's something I wanted to talk about. Like, anytime I was playing like a retro collection on the PS2, like Mega Man or Sonic, the D-pad was a great way to experience those buttons. Just felt effortless. I feel like, because this predated the original Xbox, so this was the first controller to have clickable sticks, right? Did you have, were the thumbsticks an L3 and R3 when it was the DualShock on the PS1? Because I don't know personally.
No, they weren't on the PS1. That's,
all right. So
that's what I can remember, but yeah.
Introducing clickable sticks to add more button functionality, which has gone a long way in gaming history, you know, to be 100% honest with you. And everything, it feels so satisfying. Like I said, it's the uniformity that makes it appealing, knowing instantly where you need to go, and but like also feeling like this mirror kind of feedback and sensitivity on it. You know, the D-pad lines up with, like you said, the four holy symbols, the easy to reach and easy to instantly engage with shoulders and bumpers. I just love it. It's one of those, it's modernism and minimalism meets their match. It's like almost like the precursor to what we get with Apple nowadays, you know, where it's just, it's simple and uniform, but it's for a purpose. And I think great user interfacing is that purpose. And I just really like the DualShock 2 because of that. That'd be my number one, to be honest with you.
The DualShock 2 is pretty much just the original PlayStation 1 DualShock controller, just forced on you now where I mean, in the original PlayStation 1, you didn't need it except for Ape Escape, right? Like, you only, there was only a couple of games that really utilize it. You can play the first Metal Gear Solid with a D-pad. Is it good? Great to handle? No, it's not great to handle that like that. I am not a fan of this controller. I was not a fan of the PS3 controller. I respect them for what they did because, yes, like you said, in the high school years, everybody had PlayStation 2s, right? Like, we all had them because, one, they were a lot of good games on them, but two, they're a cheap-ass DVD player as well.
Exactly. Like, no, for real.
Compared to what DVD players were at the time when we were in there. And I think that's what we all had them. And, like, my favorite controller for the PlayStation 2 is a Guitar Hero controller. Because what I played Guitar Hero on. Like, yeah. But I respect it because it is, you know, PlayStation 2 is one of the top selling consoles of all time. It has the largest gaming library as well. But I don't think it's number one.
No? Okay. What I will say is this, because we've talked about the PS2, we've talked about the PS4. The reason that, like, the PS3 is not on my list and that I wouldn't say it's better than either is something we briefly touched on. It's lightweight design. Like I've said the phrase hand feel a couple times in this episode. And it's just like when I held a PS3 controller for the first substantial amount of time when I was playing Uncharted for the first time, just something about it felt so
cheap.
I don't know. Cheap. Yeah. To a degree where I was like, I felt like moving something or hitting something on the controller too hard was going to damage it or something.
It almost feels like a third-party controller.
Yeah. It's really why I have to, like, in just my opinion, I get behind the DualShock 2 because it still feels, like, substantial and weighty. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I will. If I had to do it, it would be 4-2-3-1. When it comes to their controllers. So, we'll see.
Gotcha.
We'll see.
All right. Well, Josh, you ended with PS1, but I need to hear your number one overall. Mm. What's this going to be?
So the most perfect controller is what we're talking about, right? The best analog sticks, the best D-pad, the best button placement, the best hand grips. Oh, and also the best designs that you could get for your controller, too.
What is it? What is
that? That is the Xbox One controller. Xbox One controller, I think, is one of the most perfect handheld, aesthetically pleasing controllers made. And I'm not talking about the Elite. I'm not talking about, you know, the Elite 2 or any the adaptive controller or anything like that. What Microsoft did to perfect that controller, it is one of those things that you put it in your hand, your hands morph to the controller because for how well designed that controller actually is. I think ergonomically, that is the most perfect made controller.
Okay. Well, what else do you like about it in the gameplay set, like, kind of scenario? Tell me about your, like, opinions of its responsiveness and things like that, because I'd like to hear a little bit more.
No, I think I've never, when we were talking about responsiveness, I've never had any issues with delay or anything like that. The only downfall I could ever see with this controller is, depending on what generation of the controller you get, if you need the headphone adapter to it, but that's only if you're ever talking to people and stuff like that. You can plug your normal headsets into it, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. I guess whatever generation I have of it, I can just plug a 3.5 millimeter jack in and boom, have, you know, that connectivity.
Yeah.
The one thing I'm going to hold up and just talk to you about for a bit on is the D-pad. You know, when you were up top, you were saying all these things. I think the Xbox One D-pad is, in my opinion, very bad. I do not like how stiff it feels, like the clickiness of it. I don't think it's very good for, you know, side-scrolling games or games that would normally benefit from a D-pad. And I don't like how it kind of dips into its center, like, whereas the Switch D-pad rises up in a way to kind of meet your thumbs, this recedes from you almost, and I'm not personally into it. And that's why I joked that, like, you know, the Elite Xbox controller has a better D-pad, but only because I feel like people complained about it enough that they were like, okay, we'll put it on the expensive one, you know. But I don't get a lot out of that personally. But what do you feel differently?
I like the D-pad. I like that it's it's kind of built into the controller is the best way to kind of describe it. It's not raised out, like you said. I think it's just more comfortable from going from the analog stick there right down. So you're not like, you can drop your thumb down a little bit more. It's more relaxed. And that's what I like about the controller. It is a much more relaxed controller. The fact that it bends a little bit to the back. So when you're sitting down, your hands are kind of rested on your lap rather than being positioned up in the air, hurting your wrist or anything like that. It is a much more relaxed controller because it is a controller that's meant to be made to be comfortable with, to play for a long period of time. And I feel like not a lot of controllers actually have that replay value to them, or longevity, I should say, not replay value. But okay. And that's why I feel like the Xbox One is an amazing controller. But like I said, with the design, right? Design Labs is one of the best things I think any company has ever done. Now, it doesn't come with the console, but it is the same controller. And I think that is just a wonderful added feature that you can get to these controllers.
Can you, for any listeners who may not know, just explain Design Labs really quick? I wasn't going to bring it up, but go for it.
You can order a customized controller of your liking. You can customize every color of the controller. You can add personalized messages if you want to put your gamer tag on it, or a message to somebody, or anything along those lines. You can do it. Like, it is one of just the coolest creative things. And it's so simple. It's just like, hey, you like our controller? Let's make one specifically for you.
I agree completely. I turned my microphone off so I could go to the Design Labs website and look at it. It is a controller customization like suite that I have always been tempted to jump into and mess around with and maybe make my own.
How much are they? How much is it?
Well, I'm on the front page, so we have Xbox Design Lab. There's actually a pre-made color pattern that they're releasing in September in celebration of Rare. So it's got like a blue and black bleeding gradient on the front with a yellow D-pad and like gold yellow D-pad and gold yellow shoulder buttons. So it looks like the Rareware logo you would see at the top of like Donkey Kong Country or GoldenEye. This is $88.
So a normal controller is 60. So you're spending an extra $29 like to get a customized controller.
Yeah, what I'm seeing in the pricing of how this one's designed, well, I'll just explain it real quick. So a standard solid color paint job is $70. But if you want to have a color gradient, you know, a color fading or bleeding between one color and another, that's $80. And then this controller has rubberized grips around the section where you would put your palm. And that's an additional $6. So that's what bumps the price up on this real quick. If you just have a standard controller with no grips, your price will go down. Yeah. So color options, pattern options, comfort options, you know, you're going to get what you pay for. You might pay a lot, but you'll get a controller tailored the way you like it.
So and that's, you know, that's one awesome thing, though. Yeah. Like you, we talk about, you know, customize to your gaming style. And the fact that you can create your own controller, like, out of this normal controller, because nothing really is changing in the controller design other than just the color. But
$10 for the engraving, up to 16 characters.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Oof. I'm looking at, though. And, like, yeah. And it comes with a lot of just kind of, like, introductory palettes. You know, it's like, here's an idea. You know, start off with this and then maybe customize it how you want from there. I'm going to fall into a black hole tonight, Josh. But yeah, so those were our picks. But hey, tell us what you think. What controllers enhance your gaming experiences and have guided you through years of adventures? Tell us in the comments below. What do you think? Do you agree with any of ours? Heavily disagree with any of ours? We'd love to like talk to you about it.
Yes. And until next time, this has been Josh
and Tom,
and we'll see you in the future. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, We'll see you in the future.